What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. We'll probably definitely talk about some real estate too, just because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. We can go through some stuff and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you get anything out of the show, please tell a friend. We're here for you. And a reminder, we just finished last month's book. It was How to Talk to Anyone, 92 Little Tricks for Big Success in Relationships. And then this next month, in the month of March, we are reading Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, a classic. I haven't read it in a few years, so be a good little refresher for us. Have you started it yet? Because I haven't.
I haven't either.
I know.
I
was going to start it tonight.
Yeah, I'll probably start it tonight or tomorrow. And then, yeah, I'm ready for going over.
Yeah, dude, we're going to do that on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Because, I definitely need to, like, go back and write some notes down for that one. Just because I was talking to someone earlier about that book, and I like it, and I'm sure we'll get more into this more into that on the episode on Wednesday. But I liked the book. I just didn't, it's hard to, like, get, like, immersed in it for me, because it was, choppy.
Yeah.
You know, it's like night. It was like
didn't
every,
flow well.
Yes, it didn't flow well. It's like every like five pages was like a completely different
thing,
like idea or like whatever. Like,
it was, and there's so many of them.
Yeah, it's like hard to keep it straight.
Right.
But yeah, we'll get into that more on the next episode. But
it's definitely one of those where it's like you don't need to do all of them. You go through, find out.
That's one you could just like pick up and like open it up and be like, oh, this is a good one. You know,
oh, I need a refresher.
Right.
Just open the book and what page do I get to? Okay. That's a good one. Yeah.
I'm gonna do that one. It was a hard one to read. Like I never really looked forward to like digging into more of it. Like Atomic Habits, I was into that one for sure. This one I was just kind of like, eh. So it was, you know, not my favorite, but not the worst book I've ever read. And I definitely think there was some helpful stuff I got out of there. So,
right.
Yeah, man. So you did your first CrossFit open workout on Friday. How did that go?
Oh God. that was tough. I'm going to kill it next year. I'm going to get my ass in shape. And I mean, anytime it comes to big movements where it's like, hey, I'm having to move something from the ground to over my head or moving my entire body, which was, we're doing overhead snatches and burpees. I got a big body.
Yeah, dude.
I'm moving.
You're not built for that workout.
I'm moving weights really high, and I'm moving a big body up and down. So, it was tough.
Dude, I was fucking dead after. Like, that was one I had to, like, so I did it Friday night at the, so we for those of you that don't know, the CrossFit Open is a, so it happens at the end, it starts at the end of February every year, and this is, like, the initial, like kind of like selection, I guess you could say.
Preliminaries.
Thank you. For the CrossFit Games. So like it's usually pretty simple workouts. But they're always like really fucking tough. And like, we'll go back and like do like old CrossFit workout open workouts all the time. But these are, like, so it's like the initial ones where you'll like record yourself and then you're kind of thrown into like the big leaderboard of CrossFit. And like, that's how you see, like, there's some freaks out there that did that workout RX like sub 6 minutes.
That's insane.
Like, and I did an RX in 11:39, which is even in my gym is like pretty average. Like,
it took me 6 minutes to do a burpee.
Dude, it was tough. It was, so the workout was 21:15:9, but which is like a classic CrossFit, like, rep scheme. But it was 21 snatches with your right arm, then 21 burpees over the dumbbell, 21 snatches with your left arm, 21 burpees over the dumbbell, then 15 with your right arm over the dumbbell, left arm over the dumbbell. Like,
yeah,
it was brutal. And I did it on Friday night, and then I went straight from there to, there was a big like event in my jiu-jitsu community this past weekend. Friday night we had Jared Weiner out to Revive. He's the head of I'm part of an association called TAC Team, and there was a big seminar out there at Revive on Friday night. So I went straight from the CrossFit workout, showed up like right on time, did that for 2 hours, and then woke up the next day and we had like our big TAC Team day, which was fucking nuts. There was Murph, how many black belts?
I saw the videos.
Yeah. Oh, dude, there had to have been like 5 dozen black belts, like 60 people with a black belt.
Yeah. Jeez. It was wild, dude. There was probably what? How many people do you think were in that building?
200.
200, yeah.
Do you think people like coming in from all over? Or
yeah.
Is
yeah.
It
yeah, there
just
was people
local.
From
back
Colorado.
East.
Yeah, East Coast, West Coast.
Philly were a lot of people.
Philly, yeah, because Jared's from Philly. So, like, that's kind of where this whole thing started. And he's funny, dude.
A very hard Philly accent.
Yeah, he's got a really hard Philly. He was a cop in Philly for about 20 years. I think he's a detective or something.
I'm pretty sure he played a cameo role in Warrior.
Yeah, it was he's funny, man. And, yeah, it was crazy because we saw Kyle gave out 3 black belts, which was awesome. My coach gave out 3 black belts, which was, you know, a couple of the guys I know really well and train with pretty often. So it was really cool to see.
Was that one black belt actually Josh McKinney's dad?
Yeah. Oh, no, that guy is Josh's dad.
Oh, for real?
That guy is Josh's dad, but Josh's mom is Asian. So Josh looks very Asian, but there's always the joke that him and his dad, like, that he's adopted or something. But his mom's Asian and his dad's like Irish.
I didn't know about I didn't know about the Matt Hughes thing.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I knew about Laura Dern's dad, but I didn't know about the Matt Hughes thing.
What, that they used to train with him?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Kyle used to train with Robbie Law, all of the hits.
Colin called. Told me everything.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool. Right.
That's pretty dope.
It's a,
that's
sweet. Yeah, there's a, yeah. I mean, like Kyle's an OG, like all the, if you
really,
I bet if you talk to like a lot of these old, I mean, he was on the Ultimate Fighter. He, you know, trained under John Danaher, oh, wow. Or there, which was cool. He was his coach on the Ultimate Fighter, George St. Pierre. Like, a lot of people know who Kyle is, which is, I mean, he's a big name in the jiu-jitsu community, which is pretty cool. I mean, we're really, I mean, going to a big event like that really makes you kind of, I bet you didn't know how big Tag Team was.
No, I didn't. And I'm still trying to figure out what the tag part means.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Is it tactical?
I think so. I don't really know.
We didn't see Nick there though. So
no, so Nick was on. He had something. He's, you know, he's in the military. He's in the army, I believe.
Oh, he still is.
Uh huh.
I had no idea.
Yeah, he had something to do. He was apparently really bummed, obviously, that he couldn't be there.
He's in the reserves.
Yes, he's in the reserve. I don't know exactly what he does, but he's a killer. He's a world champion. He's a bad dude. He's one of the owners of Revive.
Okay.
And he's cool, really cool dude. He won worlds, I think, last year or 2 years ago.
I wouldn't.
He's super heavyweight. Like, I think he weighs like
6'4", maybe like 215.
Oh, he's bigger than that.
He's 240.
He's like 230, 240.
He looks
like that,
really lean.
But
though.
He's, you know, he's like jacked.
If this dude was to throw a kick at you, you'd know it.
Yeah.
It's
sure.
Not
he's
jiu-jitsu.
A big
like,
boy.
I don't want to get hit with that.
Big boy, for sure. But yeah, it was really cool. Trained with a lot of people. Like I was telling someone earlier today, like, I got my ass kicked on Saturday for sure, just because I trained with so many guys that were just way bigger and better than me, and it was fun. I had a great time.
I actually had a lot of fun rolling just like with blue belts. Like,
mm-hmm.
I think I'm near the end of my spazzy white belt days. Now I'm still a white belt, and like I need to get some stripes and shit. But like, yeah. I think I'm at the end of my spaz
good.
Era, and that I'm not gassing out as easily these days. And it's like maybe if I just like accept that I'm gonna lose most bouts and don't act like it's life or death, like I'll be okay.
Dude, that's the whole key to it, and just realize that like, yeah, it's not life or death. This guy's not gonna kill you. That's probably. When you do that and you learn how to control your breath. That's like the two things that kind of go hand in hand. Cause like that's one thing that people do when they're new and they like, they just get started cause they're not used to having a grown man on top of them trying to strangle them. They like hyperventilate, like when you just, that destroys your energy level.
Really
and, nice. And it, you can just, and then they just get zapped. And then
you think just being as relaxed as possible,
relaxed and calm, and like thinking about every movement that you make before you do it, like it's a chess match.
Yeah.
Well, and me being a white belt and being so fucking new, like the thought is in my head, like, oh, I have to use speed and force to get past this guy's guard, and it's like, no, you just got to learn how to like maneuver the technique the right way.
Yeah, just blasting through is not really going to work on the people who know what they're doing. You know.
Yeah.
It's like baseball. Like they were always telling us, like, harder you want to throw, the more relaxed you have to be.
Mm-hmm.
So
same thing, and I know that translates to like striking a lot really well, because I used to get like called out for that all the time, is being so like tight.
I was really tense yesterday.
Yeah, like really tense and like tight and everything I do, you know. And I was never great at striking by any means. That's kind of why I gave it up.
And once you loosen up,
once you kind of like learn how to like snap your punches and stuff.
I mean, like, yeah, even just throw little leg kicks and whatnot. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Yeah, so anyway, let's bring up this article we wanted to chat about, unless you had, we want to go over any wins and losses or anything.
Just getting back and just coming back from vacation and
yeah.
Down 8 pounds.
Hey, good. There yeah. It is.
Yeah. So Yeah, I'm excited about that. The biggest thing was that when you start tracking your meals, it's amazing. Like you notice so much more when it comes to eating.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been great. I mean, you know, I'll still have a drink here and there, but more controlled in that. Like, I'm not sitting there just slamming beer after beer after beer, unless I'm in Epcot, but
yeah.
But like back at home now, it's, you know, I used to just, oh, I'm gonna go grab a whiskey and not think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like,
are you like tracking that?
Now, yeah. So it's now it's like, oh, I'm gonna go grab, wait, hold on, let me check and see if I've
can got, I afford it?
I was like, yeah, let me check and see if I've got room in my meal plans for the day, like my macros and stuff for this. So if I look at it, I'm like, no, I don't. So no whiskey tonight. So it's been great. I think that's probably been the biggest thing for me. With that is cutting down the alcohol.
Dude, yeah.
And I feel so much better. I've got so much more energy.
Shocker.
Yeah. Right.
mood's probably better too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Dude,
clothes are fitting better. So
booze, man. It's such a, I mean, it like you steal your, it's just like, this is such a trait. I heard it once and I can't remember the exact way that someone described it, but it was like you're taking fun tonight to like suffer tomorrow or something like that. Cause that's what it is every time for me. Every time I drink, I'm, even if I only have like,
just give me a gummy from now on. It doesn't have as much calories and,
bro.
And hey, still,
I went out and took a gummy. Speed. It was great. I was real relaxed.
I'd much rather, you know, do some cannabis.
Yeah.
Some sort. That's way more my speed.
Do some cannabis.
Some cannabis. I just know the booze, just, man, I enjoy having a beer every now and then, but bro, it just zaps me.
Yeah. And that's the thing too, is like I found these non-alcoholic beers, Athletic. You get a bunch of different flavor, like they have IPAs and lagers.
Really?
And, oh yeah. Huh. So, hey, athletics.
I feel like the only time I think I've ever had like an NA beer was when I was on 75 hard. And I think we had like 3 or 4 weddings to go to throughout the whole thing. And it was just easier just to like have a beer in your hand. Yeah. So you didn't have to like answer the question, why aren't you drinking?
Well, so I would, when I was playing baseball,
at least for me around my friends, you know,
it's crazy. Like, what, you're not drinking? Like, what's wrong with you? Like,
It's the only drug you can do, or it's the only drug that's like socially acceptable to ask someone why they're not doing it.
It depends on who your friends are, I guess.
Yeah. But like, you know what I mean?
When I played, I would do club soda and lime.
Yeah.
Cause I was always drinking hard alcohol. Mm-hmm. So the thing was like, all right, well, I'll do a club soda and lime. No one's going to be the wiser. They're just vodka Sprite.
Yeah, that's
what they're thinking. And the bartenders would look at me like, like, yeah.
No, just a soda.
Just a club soda.
Yes. Dude, I've gotten more into club soda recently. That's kind of been like a new thing.
Well, it's almost, I mean, that's what those, like the sparkling soda, sparkling water.
Yeah.
That's all it
LaCroix.
Is.
LaCroix.
Yeah,
that's all it is. I've been crushing LaCroix.
Oh, yeah. It's so good.
It did.
Have you had those like pops? Those they have a fifth flavor, it's poppy like or something.
Poppy, poppy, and then the Olipops.
Yeah,
I've tried both of them, and they're okay.
Yeah,
they're just kind of like.
It's too much. Water, I don't drink it really.
Huh?
It's not water or an energy drink or coffee. I don't drink it.
I like a flavored something.
I like to have a little bit of that carbonation.
Carbonation, and I feel like I always drink like some sort of like. Something that's not, because I drink nothing but water and coffee like all day.
Yeah.
And then like, it's usually like around dinner, I want something like, I need something other than water.
I'll tell you what I have gotten into a lot lately is ginger ale.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
I think I've only had that like maybe like once or twice. And I feel like it was like when I was in the hospital or something.
Yeah. And I don't know what it is, but it's just so good.
If there's a soda I will drink a very ratchet second, I will have a Baja Blast. Oh my God. Ask me the last time I had Taco Bell. I couldn't. Oh, Summer Smash. Never mind.
couldn't tell you the last time I went through a drive thru and got like fast food. I guess, Gina and I were talking about this yesterday. Because I guess if you talk about, I guess that's not true what I just said. Because I went through Chick-fil-A pretty recently, but that doesn't feel like fast food. No. Is Chick-fil-A fast food?
Yes. Absolutely. And it's the fastest fucking food.
Best service in fast food.
Yeah.
Dude, it is. Because it's like that drive-thru is so efficient. that it doesn't feel like fast food at all.
You see a line at Chick-fil-A, you don't get scared.
Nah, I'm like, man, I'll be through this in 3 minutes.
God bless.
Yeah. Especially if you order ahead on the app. Fuck.
Just right through.
Straight through, baby. Because my dad does a ton of catering with Chick-fil-A. And so, like, whenever you do catering with them, they give you, like, these free cards for, like, sandwiches, nuggets, like, grilled sandwiches. Sometimes he has the breakfast ones. And dude, I've got a stack.
My favorite thing there are chicken minis. Those things are fire.
Those are so good.
Yeah. So
yeah, we got those for Callum the other day. He's crushing.
Oh, yeah.
Crushing.
My boys love Chick-fil-A. They're like, oh, dude. Like, Dad, can we get Chick-fil-A? We asked for that last night.
Yeah.
And the night before. No. Dude,
Calvin eats chicken fingers for like every fucking perfect meal.
Yeah.
Chicken fingers, mac and cheese.
Dude, those are like, he lives off those. Animal cookies or animal crackers. Yeah. Yogurt.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not a bad diet for a kid.
No. Cheez-Its.
Okay, well, there it goes. Yeah.
So. He likes, you ever had that booty popcorn?
Mm-mm.
Like, it's called Pirate's Booty Popcorn.
Mm.
Crushes that stuff. But he just calls it booty popcorn.
They like the smart ones, the cheddar. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's good
cheddar. And then, but I have kind of gotten them away. So they love First Forms bars.
Oh, cool.
So like I'll split one in half and that's what I'll give them in the morning. Because they have breakfast at school.
Oh, cool.
And so they're like, Dad, I want a bar. And my youngest loves the meat sticks. He loves the jalapeno meat sticks.
That's
and
awesome.
So he'll go in there and he'll like come running up. Dad, open. I'm like,
those are mine.
That's mine.
So, but anyway.
Yeah. So, we got these articles to pull up here. First one here, homes.com targeting 10 billion in subscription as CoStar puts pedal to the floor.
Yeah, you probably all saw this if you watched the Super Bowl, but they just, what, they have four commercials?
Four commercials. And like, I feel like every single one of them was just absolutely stacked with like actors, celebrities, actors, like big names. Mm-hmm. And so CoStar owns homes.com, and recently homes.com has like taken over that like first place spot in terms of the like the apps for real estate, like the apps that people look at homes on, like Zillow, realtor.com, Trulia, Redfin, like all those apps. Homes.com is now taking that first place spot from Zillow. So that's been a big development over the last, you know, pretty recently.
Yeah.
And because Zillow's been kind of the top dog this whole time, ever since these apps have really kind of come to fruition or, you know, have been here. So this is just it's weird to see because, you know, I was irritated because Homes.com bought out HomeSnap, which was my favorite, like, real estate app that I would use literally multiple times a day, every day. And then all of a sudden I log in one day and it would maybe log into homes.com and it's okay. I'm not like blown away by it by any means. There's some things about it that it still doesn't show me that HomeSnap used to, you know, even on the agent side of thing, which is super frustrating just because it's like, man, I need a good app that I can get to all my shit from that I don't have to, you know, like beyond the actual MLS on my computer. It's just so nice to be able to like pull everything up I need on my phone.
I'm so surprised the MLS hasn't come up with a mobile app.
Like come
let's,
on.
Let's go.
Like, what are we doing here? Like, why can I not get on Maris on my phone in like a clean
version? You
know? Like, I can get on it
through the
web. Obviously through the web, but then I'm like zooming in and like, it's a pain in the ass. So I don't understand how they haven't, but, one of the big developments or one of the things that's really going to be kind of funky here is, you know, Zillow's whole model with agents is, so if you've ever been on Zillow's app, you scroll down to the bottom, you know, there's probably like a button that says like, go see this house or, you know, go meet an agent to show this house or whatever it says. And if you clicked that, those agents, they paid to be at the bottom of those. So it might not even necessarily be that agent that you clicked on that is going to show you the house, because it's going to basically be sent to the people that can click the link the fastest. It's sent to a number of people that pay for these, and it's pretty much the first person that clicks the link that's sent to them whenever someone clicks, let's see this house. That might be the first agent that shows up, because And, you know, that's not necessarily the best thing for you because, I mean, you don't know anything about this agent. You don't know if they're qualified. And that agent is hoping that, you know, if they're going to show you this house, that you're going to continue to work with them.
Right.
And, you know, that's not necessarily the case because I've used a little bit of these leads in the past and I don't anymore because I really, really disliked the way that the people were on it because like they're just looking at you as like a guy that opens up the door. They're really not looking at you like you're their agent.
Right.
You know?
The professional that you are.
Exactly. And it's just, it's pretty, it's just, it's so informal and I don't know. I just didn't really like it.
Well, this is where this could be the demise of Zillow because with this lawsuit and the reason we got turned onto this article from what we saw is Zillow goes after the buyer's leads. Right. And with this new lawsuit, real estate agents are going to have their commission and everything negotiated before they can start showing homes. That was part of the DOJ mm-hmm. thing. And so where homes.com is going to be more superior is it's your listing, your leads. So
the listing agents are going to get the leads.
Yes. And so that's where it's going to be, you know, that's why homes.com is going to overtake Zillow because of this whole lawsuit. And unless Zillow figures out a way to change their model, they're going to be in trouble.
Right.
So, which, I mean, this whole fucking lawsuit thing.
Yeah, dude. It's been, I mean, I haven't come across anything yet, but I'm ready for it whenever it does come because, I mean, really, really the big thing that agents need to do now that they may not been doing before is really get a buyer's agency agreement signed like right away.
Right.
And you need to get that signed right away and you need to have a conversation with your clients that basically says that like, hey, if just know that right now there's, so for those of you that don't know, there was the lawsuit going on with the kind of the commission structure or basically is kind of the best way to discuss it. So in the past, the standard way it's been done is the listing, the sellers pay the listing agent's commission. And that commission is split between the listing agent and the buyer's agent in some way. It's usually in most markets around 6%. So usually that's cut somewhat in half. In some places, the listing agent gets a little bit more usually, but it's usually pretty close to half. And that pays the listing agent's fees and the buyer's agent's fees. Now, there's in this lawsuit, it's basically saying that they're separating it. So now the buyers will have to pay the buyer's agent's commission. And so that means if you're a buyer and you want to go buy this house, not only do you have to pay for your down payment, closing costs, all this stuff, you're going to have to pay, you know, anywhere from 2-3% of the purchase price. So an additional 2-3% that you weren't paying before, you're going to have to pay that to your list, to your buyer's agent if you want to work with a real estate agent.
Now, the one thing that it does still say in there is that you can ask the seller to cover that
mm-hmm.
but in your contract. But, I mean, I'm on the mortgage side. I am not a real estate agent. I am on the finance side. And this has the potential to fuck over a lot of people, especially first-time homebuyers and veterans. Veterans aren't allowed to pay any real estate fees.
Right.
And most first-time homebuyers have enough money for a down payment, and then we're trying to figure out ways through grants and seller concessions for their other closing costs that they're not going to have the money to put up to pay an agent's commission. And then now you're going to go and ask for these people to ask for a seller concession to cover the real estate commission when, okay, so that's covered, but now where are we coming up with these other funds?
Right.
And, you know, it's going to change the landscape of things. And I think it's bullshit.
Yeah, dude.
You know, I've sold homes and it was just part of it. And now granted being in the business, I understand that people that aren't in the real estate industry and don't do this every day, I can understand where it's like, oh, well, why do I have to pay?
I don't have to pay their agent's commission.
Well, let's think about it like this. So like you pay the commission and then when you go to buy your next house, you're not paying the commission. Only people that are really, like, if this really comes into play, the only people that are going to get screwed are the people that don't own a home and they're trying to buy for the first time, or, like I said, veterans. And you know, two of the biggest, well, first-time homebuyers, especially now with millennials being the first-time homebuyers, that's the second largest generation in the world. Mm. And it's something that could potentially, like, could screw things up in terms of getting people into homes and limiting people's ability to purchase a house.
Yeah. Oh, it's very limiting. I mean, you got to think, I mean, let's just be real about it and talk some numbers here.
Oh yeah.
Like if you're going to go buy a $300,000 house. And so here in St. Louis, average buyer's agent commission is usually about 2.7%. So let's just say you're going to go buy a $300,000 house and you're going to put 5% down. So $15,000. That's $15,000 that you have to come up with your down payment. That's pretty normal. That's what most people are going to put down is about 5%. So in addition to that, now you're going to have to come up with your closing costs.
Let's just say about $7,000.
$7,000. Yeah. So now we're at a total of $22,000. So in addition to that, right now you'd have to pay about $22,000. Now, if this comes into fruition and this is kind of what happens, you're going to have to come up with an additional $8,100.
Yeah.
So you just, you know, so you went from paying 22 to now you have to pay 30.
Well, that and part of the lawsuit, and this is something that kind of pissed me off because I know it's not true. Having been married to a real estate agent, obviously working with a lot of real estate agents, they were saying that, well, people that offered less commissions, they're not showing those houses because they're not going to make as much money. And I think that's bullshit because the agents that I work with have, like you, for example, like they're all really, really good agents and they want to do what's best for their clients. And if you've got a client that wants to see a house that is paying less commission, you're still going to show them that house. It is what it is. That's the job. That's your fiduciary duty. And you have a level of service that you are putting forward that, you know what? Hey, that's fine. I'm going to take care. Like, I've worked with these people. I like these people. We're going to get them in there.
Yeah, if this is the house, we're going to do it. Exactly. You know, like, I've already put in the time. I'm not going to tell you this isn't the house you're going to buy.
Right. No. Exactly. But the way the lawsuit made it seem was like agents aren't showing homes because the commission's less. And, but here's the thing now. What's going to happen is agents are going to see this and they're going to know their buyers and they're going to know what funds their buyers have. Mm-hmm. And it's just going to make it tougher for people to sell their house because the offers that are going to be coming in, like I said, most people don't have the funds to cover a down payment and closing costs. How the hell are they going to cover down payment, closing costs and the buyer's agent's commission? And they're going to have to negotiate that. So they're going to start seeing all these offers with increased sales prices. So are we going to start listing homes for less money?
Right.
And because if it doesn't appraise, then what's going to happen? Like, are we?
Right. Yeah. What do you do then?
Right. What happens?
That fucks the whole thing.
Screws everything up.
Yeah.
Now, because now you're going to start seeing more denials if it doesn't appraise because the people don't have the funds. And that's the thing. It's just, it's insane to me. Like, yes, as a seller, I understand wanting to give up a smaller portion of the money that you're getting back. But in the long run, like, it's going to help you sell your house because you're going to have more buyers looking at your house now because they can afford to purchase it with the money that they have instead of having to come to you and ask and then have to worry that it appraises out or not.
Right. I mean, I literally had this conversation with a girl last week. I'm probably going to be listing her house later this year. And we were talking about this because she's, you know, pretty in the know about things that are going on. And she, you know, she brought this up and she said, well, now do I have to pay the buyer's agent commission? And I was like, no, you don't have to. Right. But I will say it is going to make your house will sell, you know, it probably will sell for faster and for probably more money if we do offer a buyer's agent's commission because you're going to have way more buyers
that can afford it.
Way more buyers that can afford it. Way more agents that, like, it's just all around is just going to make this house easier to sell. And, you know, I was like, because she's purchasing a house, you know, where she lives now. And you know, she told me that, you know, she doesn't have to pay a buyer's agent commission there. So I was like, well, you know, think about it. In your shoes right now, like if you had to not only buy this, I can't remember how much it was, but let's just say since we said earlier $300,000 house, what if you now had to come up with an extra $8,000 to pay your buyer's agent commission?
Right.
And then, you know, she go, oh, well, that would definitely deter me from looking at that house. And I was like, well, yeah, exactly. Right. So,
and that's the thing is just like people think of buying a house as already expensive. This is just gonna make it even more expensive for people to buy.
For sure.
And, you know, it's like, we've got creative financing in terms of the programs that we have for low down payments and things like that. But at the same time, like, yeah, I don't know. It's really frustrating.
Yeah. Well, let's see. I mean, we'll see where this all goes, but, yeah. So I think we beat that horse. Let's move on to the next one. So this is definitely more your wheelhouse than mine, but, I'll let you kind of take it away here, Pat.
All right. So this came out back in July. Talking about Fannie and Freddie updating their condo policies. So a couple of years ago, they had that big complex that collapsed and the people died down in Florida. Mm-hmm. And so Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac started taking a look at things and realizing like, hey, we need to have stricter standards for the structure and safety of these places so we don't have something like this happen again and we're losing lives and stuff like that. So they brought this out and they've updated their policy. And this is something that's causing a lot of issues right now when it comes to people buying condos, because their master policy over the entire HOA and complex or project is what it's called, isn't up to date. And it's so Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac aren't accepting it because it's not insured properly on the master policy. And I ran into this on a couple deals and, you know, luckily we were able to get some changes made right at the time, just because it was about that time that the policy was renewing and we were able to get it fixed and updated properly and we're able to close. But there's still a lot of HOAs out there that haven't. Plus, let's look at this. HOAs are run by people that live there. You know, you've got property management companies and the insurance agents as a whole. These people that are running the HOA, I mean, they're everyday people that have other jobs, probably not in real estate.
Right.
And do you think they're paying attention to this shit? Okay. No. They're wanting to do what's going to be the cheapest option to keep their,
payment down.
Keep their payment, their monthly HOA payment down.
Yeah.
And so they're going to talk with the insurance agents and the insurance agents are going to come up with these policies and give them coverage that they need to cover minimally these HOA, these projects. And that's not what's needed now. It's increased and it's made it hard for people to buy. It's that, you know, you can bypass some of the insurance stuff with a larger down payment, but the whole purpose of condos is affordable living, affordable way to get into home ownership. And now it's making things not as affordable because now you're having to put, instead of putting 3 or 5%, you're having to put 10 or 15 or 20% down. And it's something that if you are on an HOA and you have in a condo, or you're a property manager, or you are an insurance agent that has master policies on these, you need to be in the know of this. Now, I called the management company on this. I called the insurance agent and none of them knew about this. So it's like, is it their fault that they're not staying up on it? Or is it Fannie and Freddie's fault for not being more vocal and say, hey, we need, like, this is it. Like, are we, like, they should be sending stuff to these HOAs like, hey, these are the new requirements if you want to be able to sell your properties. And they also like, but I, you know, I'm thinking like, hey, you're a property management company or an insurance agent. You should be in the know of this shit already. And you should be talking to these HOAs. So it's like, but it was insane to me that neither the property management companies or the insurance agent had any clue about this.
Dude, I mean, I had no idea.
Right.
I've seen how many condos I've sold since this came out.
Mm-hmm.
And we just closed one a couple weeks ago. You're like, yeah, did you know, I can't remember how this came up. And you're like, oh yeah, we haven't, you know, you didn't know about that.
Yeah.
It's like, well, let's talk about it on the podcast.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is like, and so we started hearing about, like I said, back in July, and it wasn't really a thing until recently. But now, if like I said, most of these, they're coming up on renewal. So again, if you're a property manager, listen to this. Part of an HOA in a condo or an insurance agent that has master policies on condos, you need to know this and you need to make sure these properties are insured correctly or these people are going to have a hard time selling and buying condos. So,
damn. Yeah.
And if you need a list of those, reach out to me. I'll be happy to give it to you. So
perfect.
Yeah.
So we did just finish Atomic Habits, and you know, I signed up recently for James Clear's the author of that book, his weekly newsletter, which I've been getting a lot out of it, and I think it's really awesome. Good. So I thought we could bring it up a little bit here on the podcast. So he does what's called the 3-2-1. So it's three ideas from me, two quotes from others, and one question for you. So three ideas from me. If you want to avoid criticism, create less. If you want to avoid irrelevance, create more.
Are they going to get criticized or are you going to be irrelevant?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, so that's a lot of stuff you've talked about before, Murph. I mean, like in regards to like social media and stuff. Like,
Oh, yeah.
It's like, don't be so afraid to post.
Anything braggadocious, even like talking about a post you and I made during my podcast.
Right.
Remember what it was?
Yeah. Talking about how many houses I sold, right? Or something.
No, I mean, basically, it was whenever the pandemic was in full effect and you were still seeing your way out of waiting tables. You're like, oh, well, I can get like, you know, $5 on this two-top. Or like, I got $5,000 coming off this 250.
Right.
And it's like, I understand it can be uncomfortable to talk about that kind of stuff. But the fact is that if you're going to build a brand or you're going to build something that people find value in, you have to be able to stand out. And like me, for example, I'm not particularly good at anything. Like, we're talking shit.
Yeah.
And I'm well read.
That's the thing. You're never going to impress everybody. So you're always going to have critics. Right. And it's, you know, silence the critics. Like, you know, who cares? I'm sure there's people that are
talking shit about this podcast.
Right. Motherfuckers. Yeah. Fuck you guys.
Say it to our face, bitch.
Yeah. Got a problem with it? Bring it to us. Join us on the podcast. Yeah. Tell us about
it. Sit around this fucking table.
Yeah.
There's always going to, like, if you're a creative person, I remember a couple of years ago when social started to get big, and you follow him, Aaron Gordon from Guild, and I think he's in Vegas.
Aaron knows Home Loans.
Yeah,
right?
And
I
so
I met him at Rod Khalif event I went to in Denver.
Yeah, so I just got back from San Diego where I was picking his brain. Awesome dude.
Yeah,
and he was just saying I post all this stuff and I very rarely respond to comments, because if I go through them, there's always going to be someone that's out there thinking that they know more than me,
for sure,
and going on and on and on about why I'm wrong. And
gotcha.
Yeah.
Dude, and I've got so many people comment on my shit telling people to buy houses and when the economy's this
renting.
Bad. Yeah. They're, when the economy's this bad. Good job, dude. Yeah. Way to think out for your, you know, way to only think about yourself and your own pockets. I'm like,
let's look at how many people became millionaires by owning real estate.
Bro, you know how many houses I bought since the pandemic? You know, I've bought a lot of properties in the last 4 years. You know, I mean, like, you think I'd be telling you to buy if I wasn't?
Well, it's like, but that's a great opportunity to challenge someone's credibility. It's like, okay, dude, you posted something not long ago. And I think Melissa posted something too. It's like talking about the interest rate on houses right now and how the market's so hot, but it's like, well, what's the return on your investment on buying rent? Oh, zero.
Zero, yeah.
What's the interest rate on rent? 100%.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not building any equity.
I did a post. It was pretty, it was a while ago, but it was like, yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it added up what $1,500 in rent was after 5 years. Yeah. You know, it was like almost $100,000 or something. Yeah. You know,
if I were you, I would have just asked him, like, what would you do? No, what would you advise someone to do if it was your fiduciary duty to make sure you put people into houses?
Right.
I implore you to school me in my own industry, because you're coming with a broke person's mindset. If you want to spread that upon my clients, no.
Right.
Fuck you, dude.
Well, that's the thing is, like, I just don't even respond to this shit.
Oh, I don't
just,
either.
Like, so I mean, my most commented on post last year with people in terms of criticizing was one that I posted about the Fed raising the Fed fund rate, or 2 years ago. Was the Fed raising the Fed fund rate? I'm like, fuck yeah, the Fed raised the Fed fund rate. Interest rates are going to drop. And they're like, that's not how this works. And I'm like, well, I mean, let's go back and look at this here, because just because the Fed fund rate's being raised doesn't mean interest rates are being raised. What it's showing is that the Fed is willing to combat inflation. And when they're coming out strong on inflation, that's a good sign. So it's going to cause rates to drop. Now, if they continue to raise the Fed fund rate like they did towards the end there, the last couple rate hikes, yeah, rates went up. And but now, like, looking at it, like, hey, we're gonna start having rate cuts, and, you know, depending on what is said after it happens, that's going to affect the market. So it's not always, hey, just because we're cutting rates are going to go down, and just because we're raising rates are going to go up. It just depends on where we're at in the economy and what those rate cuts mean, or rate increases mean at the time. And I had so many people commenting on that shit. And I'm just like,
you know what it is? Is that most people would rather be right than to win. They'd rather sit there
for sure
and condescend to you and tell you like, oh, well, here's the worst case scenario and this is why you're part of the problem. But like when, okay, cool. But I'm putting out content that's meant to entertain, inspire, and inform you. You're sitting there with a picture of your fucking cat fucking talking about last night's bingo game. It's like, you can be critical all you want, but from making content for the both of you, like you guys put out stuff that is there to help people. It only makes sense that you're going to have a peanut gallery.
Well, I think this video, I was like shaking my ass or something. So
I just did it. Shit, I'll probably hate on you then.
I did it because I wanted to dance. I wanted to shake my ass a little bit to some good news. But no, there's times too, like there's a lot of stuff that I post and somebody will make a comment and I'll just be like, oh, I would love to hear where you're coming up with that. Like, how did you, you know, maybe I might learn something from you. How did you, where did you hear this or why do you think differently? I'd love to hear from that.
Explain it and trying to get it instead of getting an applause from your audience.
Yeah. Like there was a comment on yours a couple of days ago that I saw on your TikTok and I was going to comment.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know, I don't check that.
Yeah. No, there was a comment on there about interest rates and home values and something. I forgot what it was. And someone commented, rates are never, like you said, we're never going to see 2% and 3% again. And the comment was like, yeah, we're never going to see 2% and 3% again because people just keep raising the value of home prices. And I'm just like, that's not how it works.
That's not dude. How it works. Like what?
Yeah. Interest rates are not dictated by appreciation on home values.
Yeah.
So anyway, but
Next one. I can't control the other person's behavior, but I can control my response. Their actions may be rude or unacceptable, but I still want my response to be measured and thoughtful. Even if they aren't doing what is right, I will still make sure I am doing what is right.
It's stolen from Meditations.
Yeah, we just talked about that from part one. So just controlling our comments and making sure. Hey.
In theory, consistency is about being disciplined, determined, and unwavering. In practice, consistency is about being adaptable. Don't have much time, scale it down. Don't have much energy, do the easy version. Find different ways to show up depending on the circumstances. Let your habits change shape to meet the demands of the day. Adaptability is the way of consistency. Oh, man, I fucking love that.
That's awesome. And it just ties into his book, too, which is figuring out a way to get 1% better.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you have to go balls to the wall on everything. Just do it.
Dude, for real. Yeah. I mean, like, think about what we were talking about before the podcast started. We were talking about the workout today at the CrossFit gym.
Yeah.
And, like, you're like, dude, I went in thinking I was going to be able to do this. And then it ended up being way harder. So I fucking had to scale it down, you know? And, like, dude, do that with literally everything, whether it's, you know, in the gym or, you know, you want to start eating better or you want to start building a business. Like, don't look at I have the tattoo that literally it is all about this. It's just, like, taking little bites of something. It's like, you know, how do you eat an elephant? That's why I have this elephant tattooed on my arm. Because, you know, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. You look at this big ass project, just take little bites of it till it's fucking gone. And, you know, just chip away at it.
Absolutely.
I mean, even to talk about our topic from the beginning of the show, which of course, white guys on a podcast talking about jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
the way of the sport is not to beat everybody. The second you get in there, there's levels to this. And as I understand it, like, that ground level is just learning how to show up and honestly how to lose.
Dude, for real. And being okay with losing. Cause like,
I'm not okay with losing.
it sucks.
Yeah, I know it sucks, but it's just part of jiu-jitsu. Like you're gonna like, I mean, like today I rolled with, there's an out of town black belt there. And I rolled with him like one round at the open mat. And I don't know. I didn't know anything about this guy. And I mean, he submitted me, you know, and I was like, oh, well, I don't really know what I'm going to get, you know, getting myself into here. This guy, you know, it's from Albuquerque, New Mexico. That's all I know about him.
I mean, let's be real. We learn more from our failures than we do from our successes. So,
yeah.
I mean, it makes you sit back and think of, like, go back and reevaluate, you know, what happened. I mean, anybody can sit back on their successes and be like, oh, yeah, I'm fucking awesome and not want to improve on it. Right. Where failing, I mean, yeah. So,
yeah. Oh, we got two quotes from others now. A French proverb from Dune by Frank Herbert.
It's Fremen.
Fremen.
Wow.
From the movie Dune.
God damn, I'm from Dune.
That is not the same universe, my friend.
I actually tried to watch that movie recently, and I fell asleep like three nights in a row. I tried to watch it.
If you're not a nerd, you can't get it, but you can appreciate that it's well made.
Yeah, it looks sick, yeah, and looks awesome. I mean, dude, I loved you know, like Star Wars and all that shit as a kid, and I still do. I just kept falling asleep. And
Dune's the original inspiration for Star Wars.
Really?
Yeah,
that's sick.
Yeah, George Lucas stole a lot of the ideas from Dune.
Really?
I hate saying that because, like, in terms of IP. There's nothing more valuable from the United States than fucking Star Wars.
Yeah.
As far as things that get parodied and like taken into all different kinds of pop culture, like nothing is as recognizable about Star Wars.
Spaceballs.
Yeah, dude. Well, dude, I mean, yeah, I love Star Wars. I mean, the newer ones are kind
trash.
Of, trash. Yeah.
Kathleen Kennedy, you're trash. I'm glad you're going to get fired.
Yeah. But I mean, the first six were sick. Oh, come on. You're going to hate on Phantom Menace?
Yes.
Dude, I love that as a kid.
There's a lot of good stuff about the prequel trilogy, but episodes
one. Okay, the prequel trilogy dominates the most recent.
No, that's definitely true. No, the Disney shit is absolutely the worst, and it's non-discernible, but.
The Mandalorian's pretty good. That's Star Wars, isn't it?
The first season.
Yeah.
They still had Gina Carano.
Yeah.
And they got rid of her, and the writing went downhill. Oh, yeah. I mean, personally, episode 3 is fucking fire.
Yeah.
But they're all full of hammy acting. Hayden Christensen's really not a good actor.
Is that the dude who plays Anakin?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, even some of Ewan McGregor's lines are really, hello there. but I mean, as far as really good shit, I mean, being able to like see the whole origin story, actually what it meant to us as kids, being able to see those, like we were 6 years old when episode 1 came out.
Darth Maul, when he comes out with that double-bladed like bow staff lightsaber,
that set up a really great character for decades to come, and that's a win. That's a big win. But the way the movies were produced, when they were produced, and
Liam Neeson as Qui-Gon Jinn, are you kidding me?
Yeah, but there could have. I wish there was more Qui-Gon though.
Yeah, you're right.
Only one.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
What's the best Star Wars though?
The best one.
Most people say Episode 5.
That's what I would say.
Empire
Strikes Back. Yeah.
It's not my favorite, but it is the best.
Yeah, I would say so. Dude, that Hoth, I love the, you know, all the shit on Hoth. Mm-hmm. And then that's the one where, you know, the whole Luke, I am your father. Right. That's for sure.
Best lightsaber battle, though.
For sure. Oh, best lightsaber battle?
Episode 3.
Yeah, episode 3 with Yoda and
Sidious?
I mean, that's up there.
I think, no, when they're on Mustafar and like they're battling it out to the end.
Well,
like,
yeah. I mean, the one where
it's Anakin. Anakin.
Yeah.
I have the high ground. But you know what that's an allusion to?
What?
That's a callback to episode 1, is that whenever Darth Maul defeats Qui-Gon Jinn, he does it because Qui-Gon becomes arrogant. He like he lets go, but like he starts thinking he's too good and fucking Darth Maul fucks him up. Well, notice how that ends up at the end, how like...
Doesn't Qui-Gon like... be on his knees and he just like
he's meditating whenever like before the like force fields go down,
right?
And then they start fighting, he thinks he's got him but he doesn't, so he gets a little arrogant, he gets stabbed. But think about like the last part of the scene, like when Obi-Wan's hanging from the thing right like below the shaft, and now he does the jump, he ends up killing Darth Maul,
right?
Like, think about Anakin, I have the high ground.
You're right.
Well, what was it? Anakin was very full of arrogance whenever that happened,
right?
It's a callback to that.
That's sick.
I have to go back and rewatch those. Been a long time.
Not episode 2. I don't like sand. It's coarse and it gets everywhere.
Oh yeah. Oh man.
I'm sorry.
Be prepared to appreciate what you meet. So, I mean, the way I'm looking at that is whether it's success or failure, be prepared for it. You know, like whatever life throws at you, be ready and sit back and accept it. And whether it's a failure, learn from it. And whether it's a success, be humble in it.
Yeah.
No, but be prepared for both.
So novelist Toni Morrison on beauty.
Great novelist.
Really?
Yeah.
I think of beauty as an absolute necessity. I don't think of it, I don't think it's a privilege or an indulgence. It's not even a quest. I think it's almost like not, dude. I feel like whenever I'm reading on here, I feel like I'm in class again, everybody's listening, and I don't want to fucking stumble on my words.
Well, I actually had to read Toni Morrison in college, so if you want to, I can take.
No,
this
I'll
one.
Take it over. I'm sorry, I gotta get over my fear here.
You know.
I think it's almost like knowledge, to which is to say, it's what we were born for. I think incorporating and then representing beauty is what humans do, with or without authorities telling us what it is. I think it would exist in any case. To startle in the wonder of being in this place, this overwhelming beauty. Of some, it is natural. Of some it is man-made. Some, it is casual. Some, it is a mere glance. Is an absolute necessity. I don't think we can do without any more than we can do without dreams or oxygen. I don't know, man. I'm not following that.
So it's very much the idea that beauty is all around you, but it's how you actually appreciate it. Yeah. And the whole thing of it is that her appreciation for beauty is that if the world didn't have its differences, if the world wasn't able to be something where we see that, like, Pat has qualities I don't have, but they make Pat great as a father, as an athlete. Same with you. Like, and then there's me. And we don't have to be the exact same to say that I find good in you. And being able to find that good and see it as beautiful, in Tony's words, the necessity of that is just as important as breathing every single day. And you know, some of the discussions you and I have had recently that I haven't always seen the beauty in life, especially the beginning of this year, for a tough time. But then sometimes you see something that's tough and it's hard, or you see someone struggle for something they care about, and it reminds you that the world is much bigger than your problems. And when you focus on your problems, that's largely what you see. But when you find the beauty in things, it becomes necessary to do that. Otherwise, you're probably going to be miserable.
Well said, dude.
English major,
I was going to say that. I'm just struggling not to fucking read it without stumbling over my words.
I know my lane, baby.
I like this one, though. Design for relaxation. What is one, so this is the one question for you. Design for relaxation. What is one change I can make to my environment that promotes mental peace and reduces stress?
Where's the weed at?
No, I think what's one thing that I would change about my environment that promotes mental peace and reduces stress? I think I should start doing. Excuse me. Really setting my, and I think I've talked about it on here before, but like really setting like the night before, getting all my shit together and ready for the morning, because I feel like in the mornings I just feel so hectic sometimes, getting Calvin out of here, getting everything ready to go. Like just if I prepared myself the night before when I really don't feel like it, like getting my gym bag together, getting my work stuff together, like just getting everything ready for the morning, maybe setting my clothes out so that I wake up and it's easy and I don't have to make any decisions. I think that would definitely reduce some stress in my life, because I feel like in the morning sometimes, like when it's just me and him here, and like, you know, some mornings he's a little bit more agreeable and things are easier. And then there's other mornings where it's just like a fucking tornado's hitting downstairs and you gotta, like, you know, you're dodging yogurt and Cheeto and you know, and animal crackers and stuff and, you know, dumping stuff everywhere. And, you know, it's just harder to get out of the door sometimes. So I think if I were to like kind of set myself up a little bit better, I think that would definitely reduce some stress in my life. So that's something I think I can definitely do.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's one that it took me a while to learn with the kids, and I really didn't start implementing it until becoming a single dad, because before you had someone to lean on that could help with. And then
if Gina wasn't here, bro.
Telling you, man, it's...
She does so much.
So yeah, and that's like, for me, it's the cleaning aspect. So if I could change one aspect, I need to work with my boys on and teaching them how to clean up after themselves before they make their next mess. And going through that with them and helping them, because I mean, I just had them over the weekend and I will be going home tonight and deep cleaning my house because it is a disaster. Yeah. I mean, I got home last night after dropping them off and then had a hockey game, and I was like looking at it and I'm like, tomorrow.
You're mine.
it's just, again, organizing, you know, staying on top of these things. And even if it's there, they're the ones making the mess, but staying on top of it to where it's like, all right, hey, I see that they're switching up from something else, cleaning that mess up while they're doing whatever else they're doing. So,
yeah. Well, that's solid, man. One other thing I think I wanted to talk about, or, you know, bring up that before we get out of here is, you know, we were talking about it before, but, you know, we hit, what is this, our 22nd episode now?
It's episode 22, take 2.
Yeah. Take two. Yeah. So, you know, we hit, so apparently there's a thing in podcasting that, you know, like 90% of the episodes that start or something that don't do 20 episodes.
Yeah.
And here we are, you know, we're 22 episodes into this thing, man. And, man, I'm having a lot of fun. I'm really enjoying it. And, I really look forward to these, and I think this is going somewhere. You know, we've got a ton of guests lined up. I'm looking forward to our guests later this week.
The guests that we have already booked out for the rest of the month. Yeah, and then,
I mean, we've got a ton of shit going on, and it's awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited. That's the thing is, and I touched on it in that post today.
Yeah, kind of why I wanted to bring it up.
Yeah, and it's just like, when you asked me to do this, and you said Murph was on board, I knew the three of our mentalities, like no quit. We are going to do everything balls to the wall and strive to get better while doing it. And so I knew that this was something that we were going to be successful at. Mm-hmm. And however you want to define success, I'm not looking at it in terms of subscribers and followers and all that, mm-hmm. but like, do we want them? Yes. Yeah. Follow and subscribe, please.
Please
subscribe.
Share, please. Yes, thank
and
you.
Share. But just being able to get here every week, being consistent with it, and part of what we just talked about, but being consistent with it. And I look forward to this every week. Like,
I do too.
This is my favorite thing to do every week, and sit down to where the three of us can just sit here and have a great conversation, bring on some awesome people that are very interesting and unique and different.
Highlight them.
And highlight them. And I mean, the whole, I didn't even know the 20 episode thing was a thing. I just like, fuck yeah, this is going to be awesome.
Yeah, I heard another podcast say that stat. So I was like, oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. I think it was the reference from me going on Austin Slagle's podcast, the Failure Podcast up in Vancouver, Washington. And I was his 20th guest.
Yeah.
Sick.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I didn't even think, I'm fucking laugh at 20 episodes. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's nothing.
That's nothing.
We got here in 2.5 months.
But what helps is, I mean, we have Murph.
Yeah.
And no, we do. We have our Murph. And Murph does a lot of the tough behind the scenes work. We just show up, obviously we're picking the articles and we're picking the things that we're talking about, and we got to mm-hmm. research it so we know what we're going to talk about.
Right, and prepare for the guests.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, come up with good questions to ask and stuff like that.
But, exactly. Yeah. And, but the hard part, we're not editing, we're not doing any of that stuff. So thank you, Murph, because you're killing it for us on that part. And it's awesome that it's starting to get, you know, it's getting recognized, like, in how your business is growing, not just because of the show, but just because of everything that you're doing, like being on that panel. Fuck yeah. Congratulations.
Yeah, dude. Thank you.
That's awesome.
Huge.
You know, I feel like probably most people fail because they don't have a Murph.
Yeah.
And we've got a Murph.
I think on the first take of this, you know, I don't know if you want to ask the same question again, but I think it was something along the lines of,
why do you think we're,
yeah, why do you, what, you know, why do you think you've made it this far, or what? Do you remember what the question was?
What would be the number one reason we've made it to this point in our podcasting
career?
That's
what it was. And I said, because of you. Because it's like, dude, we don't have to think about anything. I mean, I mean, after we sit here and talk about, I mean, obviously we think about, you know, what Pat just said with coming up, with preparing for the guest, thinking about what we're going to talk about, shit like that.
But that's easy.
It's easy stuff. But like all the technical behind the scenes stuff, or, you know, why I would think that most podcasts don't get to that 20 episodes, would be because they get burnt the fuck out on, because they're probably editing it all themselves and clipping it all together and dealing with the, fuck, we just lost an episode, you know, after they just did it all themselves, you know.
Those texts you got to wake up to from me, and I was trying everything in my heart possible to, like, make sure I could get that file back. I don't like sending those messages, dog. Oh, they piss me off. Sure.
But, I mean, like I said, we get it. Like, we know that you're not intentionally trying, and shit's going to happen. It's like,
dude, we know you didn't want to, like...
Again, how are we going to approach or appreciate something that, whether it's good or bad? Like, you know, that's the thing. We realize, like, this shit's going to happen. And guess what? All that means is I get to hang out with you guys an extra day and chat with you guys again. It's not like I fucking hate you guys. Like, I enjoy my time with you guys, and I enjoy having these conversations. And I feel like I just get rejuvenated after we do it. Like, it's just
a little therapy session. Yeah, or something, exactly. You know,
well, for me,
vent about shit. And,
Well, personally, for me, like, when I coach people in social media, I tell them to focus on three things, whether it's you're worried about numbers or sales or anything. It's like that shit's great, but it's a product of, in my experience, understanding these three things, which is, number one, you have to know who you are And that was part of deciding the focus. While I may not be a father, I am a man, and I do care about winning, and I do care about business, and you two inspire me to be a dad. Well, those are things you can talk to people in a credible and relatable way. You know who you are. You can know who you're talking to. Number two is be valuable. Teach people stuff. Make them laugh and smile. Inspire them. Like, you can find ways to do this, and it doesn't have to be that strenuous. But the most important thing, and why I think we've gotten to this point, and why I think, regardless of what the future holds and circumstantial basis, you know, we're having fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun, man. I look forward to these, you know. Well,
most guys are worried about fucking getting a deal, or they're worried about sponsorships, or they're worried about subscribers or getting paid. And it's like, guys, that is a result of you unselfishly giving value to your audience. And I preach that because that's how I was taught. And being on that panel, you know, I'll be with two of my mentors, Matt Joe and Seema.
Yeah.
I know most of what I know how to work a camera because of Matt Joe, and I know most of what I know about social media from Seema. It's a very cool moment to realize, and there's going to be a moment in your guys' future where one of your guests decides to start a podcast, and they're going to make all the mistakes that we made and we'll probably still make.
Well, I mean, shit. I mean, I've had multiple people reach out like, dude, hey, love following the podcast. You guys are doing awesome. Hey, how did you get started? What are you? I'm like, let me get you in touch with him. Let me talk to
Murph. I got a guy.
Yeah, talk to Murph.
Yeah, because it's like if we didn't have you, this would be a completely different experience.
I mean, shit. I mean, we both have our full-time jobs, mortgages, real estate, like, which takes up a lot of time.
Both dads.
Yeah.
We're both, you know, you do hockey, I do jiu-jitsu, we both do CrossFit. Yeah. Like, we've got a lot of shit going on, buddy.
Yeah. And, yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's just...
trying to edit all this, there's no fucking way.
No,
it probably takes you a couple hours to do this. It'd take me a whole fucking week to do.
It just depends.
Yeah, especially you already know how to use the software and all that shit. You know, we'd have to learn that. So I'm sure there's a fucking 24-hour, 30-hour, 50-hour learning curve there.
It depends on whose content I'm editing, because our shit, we don't interrupt each other.
Yeah,
it's very simple to edit out one of our episodes in about 2 to 3 hours most. My guys up in New York, oh my God, they interrupt each other like every other fucking word, and it creates a very long, and I hope you guys hear this shit too, Speakeasy Podcast up in Bronx, New York. You little motherfuckers fucking always interrupting each other, making my work there. I know I feel this way, but all the same, it's like simple conversation, be valuable to the audience, and also divide up your labor. Not everyone has to do everything.
No. Right.
And then for me, like I said, it's just fun.
Yeah, dude.
So much fun.
A blast.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a good place for us to wrap it up. What do you guys think? You guys have anything else to say?
Like I said, hey, we do this for fun. We enjoy this. We hope you get something out of it. Like, subscribe, follow, whatever. If not, cool. We're still going to do this. So.
Perfect. Let's leave it on that. Oh, sorry.
Sorry to fuck everything up. In closing, guys, as the person who does produce this show, I take a lot of pride in doing it, and I'm not perfect. I fuck a lot of things up. I often have to edit videos twice over. You need to find good people you can work with. You need to focus on talking to people, and you need to have a specific lane that you can really hammer on again and again and again. Focus on putting out something high quality. Don't worry about your ego, and don't worry about getting the win out of it. The win is deciding to talk about something and offering something to an audience. If you can do that, your podcast, your YouTube channel, your fucking Facebook page, it doesn't matter. People will find you valuable, and you'll get everything you want out of life.
I don't want to speak for Zach on this, but I trust you with everything. I mean, that's why we come to you and ask you the questions that we ask, and you shoot it to us straight, which is great, which is what everybody needs. And so, yeah, no, man, we appreciate you.
Absolutely. All right, guys. Well, hit that subscribe button for me. Like, subscribe, and we will see you guys on Thursday.